Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom, and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening, and as always, brought to you by the great people at www.patriotfamilies.com. A group of Americans who truly believe that, yes, we are the nation, and it's up to each and every one of us to stand up for what we believe in, to speak the truth without fear or favor, and to follow through with what we believe to be the greatness this country has earned with over 200 years of individual liberty, with individual responsibility, free market economy, and the rights of the citizens protected by government and not coming from government. I'd like to congratulate all the folks who went out yesterday and stood up for the First Amendment by visiting Chick-fil-A. For those of you listening who may be pro-gay marriage or pro-homosexual activism, the protest of people visiting a business to purchase a product had absolutely nothing to do with whether or not they believed in the same things as the CEO of Chick-fil-A. For the vast majority of people who turned out, the issue was not homosexuality. It was not biblical interpretations of marriage. It was the unconscionable acts and speeches of elected officials who claimed that they would deny a gentleman to do business in their towns because they disagreed with his religious beliefs. I don't care who marries who. I have absolutely nothing whatsoever against anybody loving anybody, so long as they are consenting adults and they are happy with it. I support the right of every American, whether he be a business leader or a garbage man or the guy sitting on the street in New York homeless, to speak what he or she believes and to be able to engage in commerce, regardless of his or her religious beliefs. I do not espouse the belief of Islam, but I would not ever, ever suggest that anyone who is Muslim should not be permitted to operate a business in my town because of their religious beliefs. As a matter of fact, one of our local businesses that I patronize just about three times a week is owned and operated by a gentleman who follows the Islamic faith. He's a really nice guy. He does a good job of providing gasoline and convenience items. He's polite and friendly. The folk who work there are very helpful, very courteous. It's always a pleasure to do business with him and staff. His beliefs are his beliefs. He has the right to express them. Should he do something that damages me or mine, or discriminates against people by refusing to serve them or hire them because they don't share his religious beliefs, we have laws on the books to prevent that kind of thing. But fortunately today, thank God, there are no laws on the books that say you have to be Chicago values to open a fast food restaurant in that incredibly, I don't even know what adjective to use for Chicago, corrupt, venal, dangerous, murder capital of the United States. Personally, I would feel very complimented if Mr. Emanuel told me that I didn't meet Chicago's values either. I devoutly hope I don't. I refuse to espouse any values that limit the individual's right to self-expression and freedom of worship. Those rights are granted to us in the First Amendment for a reason. They are first in the 10 amendments that form the Bill of Rights because to our founding fathers, they were the cornerstone of a free people who could govern themselves. And on a practical note, if we limit the ability people to speak out what they believe because we find it quote unquote offensive or unpleasant or upsets us or we don't agree with it. We are shoving them down into a hole where they can plot and plan and become angrier and more desperate and more willing to strap on an explosive device and walk into your local convenience store and detonate it. I don't agree with 99.9% of what Louis Farrakhan says. But I would rather he have a forum to spout his hateful speech and get the idea that somebody is listening rather than become so much more deranged than he already is that he decides the only way he can get attention is to blow up me or my family. When you limit the ability of people to express their feelings and their views, you create a much more dangerous situation than progressives would like to have you believe. The progressive left believes in freedom of speech, but only if it is politically correct speech, and only if it agrees with them. My support for the protest of Chick-fil-A is basically support for a belief that political correctness is the death knell of our nation. And it leads me to our topic for this evening, our politically correct public schools and what they are doing to our nation's future. I have in front of me this evening a copy of the Morning Bell, which is an daily email newsletter from the Heritage Foundation. And it came out on July 31st, the 100th anniversary of Milton Friedman's birth. A brilliant man, Milton Friedman. A genius of an economist. A very wise man. who understood that free markets and free people create. Governments do not. Friedman was a champion of school choice. He believed that the greatest barrier to success for most minority children was their inability to access good, rigorous educational institutions. Our current president spends a great deal of time telling everybody that everyone should go to college, and he wants us to pay for it. His latest attempt to level the playing field and make everything politically correct from the progressive point of view is an executive order that affects the Department of Education. The new White House, I'm reading from the email newsletter, quote, "The new White House initiative on educational excellence for African Americans is supposed to, quote, help expand educational opportunities, improve educational outcomes, and deliver a complete and competitive education for all African Americans," unquote. To continue with the article from the Heritage Foundation, this is to be done, quote, "in part by supporting efforts to improve the recruitment, preparation, development, and retention of successful African American teachers and school leaders and other effective teachers and school leaders responsible for the education of African American students," unquote. To go on with the Heritage's words, "America's students don't need teachers hand-picked for them by the teachers' unions or by the federal government. They need the power to pick their own teachers. Parents need the freedom to send their children to the school of their choice, to find the academic and social environment that works best for them." One of the requirements under this House initiative is that disciplinary procedures must be tracked so that the Department of Education and the federal government can make sure that African American students are not disproportionately punished or referred to special education. What this means, in addition to tons more bureaucratic paperwork, is that teachers and administrators are now going to have to be extraordinarily careful about how they try to maintain a positive learning environment and implement disciplinary consequences for inappropriate behavior. Should the numbers not match the proportion of African-American students in a school, then they are basically setting themselves up for punitive sanctions and or withholding of funds from our beloved federal government. Even though this executive initiative does not state that directly, you and I all know that our current administration is not above using threats and coercion and intimidation to put forth its progressive agenda. I had a student in my ISS classroom who was very bright. He was also very lazy and a congenital liar. He deliberately lied about completing an assignment that he had not done and stated that he didn't complete it because it was never given to him. He made this statement to my principal. He did not know that I keep a log of the information, instructions, and assignments given to my students by their teachers and by me. And he did not expect me to open his notebook and show the principal in the student's presence the material he was to have done marked as to be completed on that day. This particular student happened to be African American. He also happened to have a mother who stated in the school office as she was leaving after her son had been suspended for the fourth time for insufferable rudeness, refusal to do the work the teacher gave him, and many other behavioral problems. "Well, that's all right, son. They just don't want you to succeed because you're black." This is the same attitude that recently came out of the mouth of a Virginia state senator, state delegate, a lady who was rejoicing that at last she had convinced her children that racism is alive and well in this country. Apparently, her kids hadn't experienced any, but she was able to convince them that it exists by vilifying anyone who would consider disagreeing with our president on the basis that they were inherently racist and they just didn't want anybody his color to have any position of power. It's the same mentality and the same pattern of this latest executive order initiative. Our president attempted to end the Washington, D.C. voucher system. He was finally persuaded to put it back in place. Washington, D.C. public schools have a graduation rate of approximately 55%. Students attending private schools under the voucher system, and this is from the newsletter from the Heritage Foundation, have a graduation rate of 91%, which is well above the national average. Students can only bring to school what they get from home. And I don't just mean notebooks, filler paper, calculators, pens, pencils, rulers, and glue sticks. If there is no respect for knowledge, and there is no desire to learn anything other than the best way to apply for a more government aid in the home, all of the recruited, successful African-American teachers and elimination of discipline in school is not going to make up for that lack. We have a huge cultural divide, ladies and gentlemen, not a racial one. The performance of African-American students in inner-city schools has nothing whatsoever to do with race as genetic characteristics. Genetic characteristics of being either Negro, Caucasian, Oriental, Gypsy, Mediterranean, Semite, Native American, Siberian, have absolutely nothing to do with a child's ability or desire to learn. The ability and desire to learn is fostered first in the home. It is fostered by parents who also have the ability and the desire to learn. And until the culture of gimme, gimme, gimme because you owe me for 200 years of slavery is defeated, we will not improve the performance of African American students in our schools. There is a culture that tells African American children that the best thing they can do is hate and blame anyone who is not African-American for any failure, defeat, or difficulty they may have. It is such a perversion of Martin Luther King's dream that one day a man would be judged by the content of his character and not the color of his skin. It is a wicked and evil cultural proclivity that is being fostered, maintained, encouraged, and basically protected by the progressive left and its social welfare and discriminatory regulatory policies. When you send your child to school, that child should be prepared to accept the fact that he or she is supposed to listen to the teacher, is supposed to do the tasks set for him or her by the teacher, is supposed to speak respectfully to teachers and staff, is supposed to, quote unquote, play fair on the playground, is supposed to be aware that even though someone may be different from them, that is not a cause for fear or hatred. It is a cause for delight. But that is not the culture that is sending students to poorly performing inner city schools. The culture that sends students to inner city schools tells those children from birth, you are a victim. You will never succeed without the aid of government dole, because the evil white people will prevent you from ever becoming of value. When you teach a child from the first moment of his birth this philosophy, why would you expect that child to succeed at anything? My friend Linda asked, whatever happened to common decency? It got very uncommon, Linda. The number of people that I have met and known in my 65 years of life, almost 66 now, who believed in themselves not because they were a particular color or particular faith or a particular heritage or a particular size or shape or sex, is astronomical. I have worked with, gone to school with, been neighbors with, been friends with, been acquaintances with, been business with, people of practically every color and every ethnicity and every heritage that you can think of. And never once in all my life have I made a prejudgment that because somebody belongs to this group, that group, or the other group, I automatically hate them. And yet, so many African-American kids are told throughout their childhood that it is their duty to hate white people. It is not the lack of role models in the sense of well-educated and well-performing African-American teachers, administrators, etc. There are plenty of them. I worked under an African-American principal for 4 years who was one of the finest gentlemen I have ever known and very, very good at his job. And this fall, I will be working under another African-American principal. I have not yet met him, so I know nothing about his character or his personality or what he may want to change. But I'm not automatically assuming he's going to walk in the door and tell me, I don't like you, you're white, I'm going to make sure the school board fires you. And yet, African-American children in the ghetto culture and mentality are being told this. They are being taught from the cradle that the only bar to their success is their innate victimhood and the evil white people with whom they share this nation. The civil rights movement was designed to give opportunity to all men and women, regardless of color. The Civil Rights Act put in place to end sure of that. But along with it came the lovely idea of, gee, let's dumb down the schools so kids coming from the ghetto schools won't feel like they can't be successful. Or let's make sure that we have the right proportion of African Americans according to the national population in the same classes. We've got to do it by the numbers because that's going to make everybody equal. No, it's not. It's not going to make everybody equal in intelligence, in desire, in ability, in talent, in skill. You can't do that with human beings. And you can't promise an entire group of people who spent over 100 years trying to prove that they could succeed, that they have to remain victims and under government control, and that that's the only kind of success they're ever going to have. It isn't about hand-picking African-American teachers. It isn't about making sure that African-Americans aren't unfairly or disproportionately disciplined. It's about changing the culture of victimhood. And that can only be done by African-Americans themselves. Successful, brilliant people like Condoleezza Rice, Allen West. These are people who show that they aren't victims, who believe in the promise that opportunity provides, who understand that you can rise by your own efforts, and that you do not need to be artificially endowed by government in order to do so. White Americans, quite often, feel intimidated when they wish to disagree with an African American. That's part of the reason why our current president got elected. If you disagree with an African American in a potential position of power, anywhere in our society, the first thing that white Americans are taught to think is that, oh my God, he or she's going to think I'm a racist. Political correctness has put more barriers between people's honest dialogue with another about what truly needs to be done for this nation than anything I can think of. And we're promulgating it in our public schools. This current ridiculous executive initiative is trying to do the same failed thing over again. It has absolutely no effect because it starts in the wrong places. My friend Linda in the chat room said that's the antithesis of diversity of thought, and she's quite correct. It is. Diversity doesn't mean divisiveness. It doesn't mean setting up a barrier between you and someone who is different. It means acknowledging that all of our differences matter less than all of our common goals. And the common goal of American culture, as it should be promulgated by American public education, is a strong work ethic, personal integrity, individual liberty with individual responsibility for one's own acts and choices, and the willingness to accept that I may not agree with you, but I will defend to the death your right to express your views, is the hallmark of a true American citizen. All of the playing field leveling garbage that we hear from the progressive left is just that. It's something that should be dumped into the recycle bin. No, don't put it in the recycle bin because we want it back in society. Dump it in the trash and get rid of it. Make a landfill out of it. You cannot level the playing field of life, ladies and gentlemen, because it is not a game. Living only has rules because society imposes those rules in order to protect and grow the particular society that creates the rules. Our society, our culture in America, is based upon the idea that a free people can govern themselves as a nation if they can also govern themselves as individuals. That ethics, morality, integrity, and genuine charity are the responsibility of the individual and not the state. That governments are instituted among men to protect the rights of the people, and that those rights come from nature and nature's God and not government. And all of the compensation and reparation and leveling of the playing field will not make an ignorant man knowledgeable, a stupid man smart, or a smart man dumb. We are unique individuals, ladies and gentlemen, and our public schools need to recognize that uniqueness, not out of political correctness, but out of the potential of every child who walks through the doors of a first grade classroom. And that classroom should give that child as much opportunity to learn as is possible. That opportunity to learn is the reason our founding fathers were in favor of public education. Not to level the playing field, but to give everyone the opportunity to learn so that he or she could become a functioning, responsible, self-governing individual and part of a self-governed nation. It wasn't about leveling the playing field. It wasn't about making everybody Benjamin Franklin or Thomas Jefferson or even Roger Sherman or Sam Adams or John Adams or any of the founding fathers. Half the time they disagreed with each other violently enough to, you know, almost fight a duel over it. And it did happen with Hamilton and Burr. They understood that you cannot force anybody to learn. And you should not force anyone to remain ignorant because you deny them the opportunity to learn. My friend Rod says that knowledge doesn't make you smart. It's the proper use of knowledge that does that. He's correct. Knowledge is a lot like the CPU of a computer. It's a wonderful tool. But if I use my knowledge to bludgeon you to death, or build a bomb, or figure out how I can get enough automatic weapons to kill however many people are visiting the movie theater for a premiere, then it's my responsibility for my action. It's not the knowledge or the school that gave it to me or the person who told me about it or the internet. It's my personal responsibility. This latest executive initiative to document and track the quote-unquote disproportionate disciplinary measures and referrals to special education among African Americans is just one more step along that slippery slope that basically says you do not have to be a functioning citizen of American culture. You can be an absolute jerk, and we'll put up with it because we feel sorry for you. And we owe it to you. You're entitled to be a jerk. Now, I'm sorry. think anybody's entitled to be a jerk. And I don't think anyone, African American, Chinese American, Native American, Hispanic American, any kind of hyphenated American, is entitled to be anything but American. That's enough responsibility and enough joy and enough delight for anyone. We have done an amazing thing in this nation of ours, ladies and gentlemen, for 200 plus years. We have created and kept alive a society that goes farther than any other society in history to protect itself without eliminating the rights of the individual in the process. This is an amazing thing. It is mind-boggling. The amount of freedom that we have, that we take for granted and are so used to, and assume that everybody else understands, is a phenomenon unmatched in the history of human beings. We accept it as our just due because we grew up with parents and teachers that taught us, not indoctrinated us, but taught us to learn and explore and experiment and think about new ways to do things, to think outside the box, not to be a good little clone who stays in the box until pulled out to do the government's bidding, to build a new box if we wanted one, or to get rid of it and decide we don't want to live in a box anymore. The ability to get into one's car and travel all over this country from state to state without anybody ever asking you, what are you doing here and why are you here, or I will arrest you. In practically every other society on earth, with very few exceptions, is unprecedented. The insanity that is being proposed by the progressive left in our current government circles will push us over the cliff and down to the depths from which we will never be able to rise. My friend says to have a little show your pippers, please, is coming to us. Unfortunately, she's quite correct. Could easily happen. GPS tracking and cell phone tracking and the latest medical marvel of swallowing a nano pill that uses your stomach acid to activate it to send signals to a patch, which you can then pull up on your iPhone to check your blood pressure, to check your vitamins, to check everything else. And, of course, practically everybody else can probably pull up all those lovely internal things, too. It's kind of like the, uh-oh, look at this. Here's somebody with high blood pressure and they're over 70 and they're coming out. Okay, sorry about that. The Council on Expedient and Necessary Care says that I'm afraid you're not a good risk for heart surgery or bypass because you're probably not going to live long enough to enjoy it. The ramifications are huge. The understanding that is lacking in so many American minds these days is that government is not your savior. Government is trying hard to be your execution. In addition to the article from Heritage Foundation, I also printed out another one from The Blaze that gives a salute to Milton Friedman, the genius economist who understood that free people and free markets innovate, create, and make the world a better place. And in the article, it gives six of his most notable quotes. One of them that is very apropos to our current administration in Washington is this one. And I'm quoting Milton Friedman. Concentrated power is not rendered harmless by the good intentions of those who create it. We all have heard what road is paved with good intentions. The good intentions of raising African American children to a competitive level of education, as in this latest executive initiative, is a sterling example of how wise Mr. Friedman was. It's more power. It's more control. It's more leveling of a non-existent playing field so that nobody can play the game. Another one of Mr. Friedman's quotes that I really like, and it's apropos for tonight's topic, governments never learn. Only people learn. Our government has been funding Head Start for 30 years plus. It doesn't work. There is no appreciable difference between the success rates of those who attend Head Start and those who don't by the time they're 8 years old. And by the time you're 8 years old is when you are beginning to enter into more complex ideas in all of these subject areas. Government never learns. Government merely decides something was underfunded and throws more money at it, hoping that more money is going to make it automatically a much better idea. May I suggest Solyndra? That didn't work very well, but it's the same identical situation. We have been pouring billions into our public schools. There's a quote here. Let's see. The District of Columbia, this is a quote from the Heritage Foundation's Morning Bell. The District of Columbia is spending nearly $30,000 per student in a district that has one of the lowest graduation rates in the nation and produces some of the country's lowest achievement scores. And the president wanted to stop the voucher program in D.C. because the D.C. schools are doing so well. Sasha, yeah, don't go there. I'll bet you anything you want to name, there's a single member of Congress who sends his children or her children to public schools in Washington, D.C. They'll have lots of good, compassionate, common sense reasons why they don't, because they won't tell you that they don't want their kids killed or beaten up for a pair of sneakers. Another quote that I like from Mr. Friedman, and this also has its place in tonight's topic. Hell has no fury like a bureaucrat scorned. Saw an example of that today when they interviewed a gentleman who is the CEO of the company called that makes Buckyballs, little magnetic metal balls that are sold to adults as office desk decorations and little adult play toys, who is being put out of business by the Environmental Protection Agency because if some child swallowed a dozen of these magnetic balls, it might block its intestines and kill it. The gentleman has 5 warning labels on every package of his product. It is marketed to adults only. It is not sold in toy stores. He has done everything and jumped through every hoop that government regulation says he must. And now, because there have been something like 30 cases of people, children, swallowing these things, what in the heck are children doing with them in the first place? What parent is stupid enough to let the kid anywhere near his buckyballs? And is it the fault of the man who created them as an adult toy that the quote-unquote adult can't read the warning label? No, that's the fault of our public school system, ladies and gentlemen, and aren't we doing a great job at educating our population? Another quote from Friedman, which is very apropos, not necessarily to tonight's topic, but to the fact that the House of Representatives has decided to suffer through August in Washington, is Mr. Friedman stated, "I am in favor of cutting taxes under any circumstances and for any reason, for any excuse, for any reason, whenever it's possible." Because Mr. Friedman knew that the more you feed government, the bigger and fatter and less efficient and more oppressive government becomes. And taxes are the government's Burger King. They're the government's box of sugar-filled, jelly-filled, chocolate-coated, sprinkled donuts. Taxes are the fuel that puts 10,000 more IRS agents and 50,000 bureaucrats in place to handle a health care program that the American people don't want, didn't ask for, and have fought, and that only passed because of shenanigans by a senile fool in the Senate. When we have cut taxes historically, federal taxes, our economy has grown and improved. Basic economics is another thing that isn't taught in our politically correct public schools. Oh no, our politically correct public schools have an African-American teacher telling a student who disagreed with Obama's policies that he could be arrested for saying something negative about the president's policies. My friend Rod also adds that taxes take money out of the hands of consumers who buy things. And buying things means you support the jobs that manufacture those things and sell those things and transport those things and repair those things. It is an intricate dance of dollars and cents and buyers and sellers. And when it is turned into a patterned minuet with only specific steps allowed to specific music at specific times and specific places, you lose. A free enterprise nation, a free market economy, is not a minuet. It has aspects of a square dance and a jitterbug and a waltz and a breakdancing and everything else, because it recognizes that everybody is different. That there is a market for the strangest, weirdest, silliest idea, the most brilliant innovation that will change things forever. People are not motivated by the desire to have only as much as their neighbor. People are motivated by the desire to have more than they had yesterday. As species, we are not bred for contentment, ladies and gentlemen. We are predators. We are tool makers. We are curious. We are innovative. We are creative. We are argumentative and selfish and incredibly brave and incredibly foolish and incredibly cowardly and incredibly nice, because we are individuals. And in order to make the most of what we are, we don't need to be imbued with a culture of victimhood. We need to be imbued with a desire to learn and grow and achieve and question and think of other ways to do everything. It isn't ethnicity that keeps African American students on the low end of the educational spectrum. It's culture. The culture of professional victimhood. The culture of hatred and blaming somebody else. The culture of gnawing old bones in the dark. The culture of the sins of the great-great-grandfathers must be visited upon their white children. The absurdity, the idiocy of deliberately shooting yourself in the foot so that you can collect disability is pretty much a description of the culture of ghetto African American thought. That is exactly what people like Louis Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and the Reverend Wright promulgate. When you spend all of your creative energy figuring out new ways to hate somebody, it is unlikely that you will ever succeed at anything except a very long prison sentence. And the disproportionate number of African Americans in United States prisons and jails is an excellent illustration of this maxim. Until conservative African American leaders, and I use the term conservative because liberal African American leaders do not want to change the victim culture that is their power base. The promise to make whitey pay for it is inherent in 99% of the election rhetoric of most Democratic Party African American candidates. It will take more Alan Wests, more Condoleezza Rices, more Herman Cains, people who believe, really believe, in Martin Luther King's dream. Not just give it lip service or use it as an excuse for hatred, but believe it and know that it's pretty much achieved everywhere outside the ghetto. I don't hate people because of the color of their skin. I don't hate anybody, actually, at the moment. There are a lot of actions of people that I really do hate. I hate hypocrisy. I hate deceit. I hate cruelty. Those I hate, not people. I certainly don't choose my friends or my colleagues based on their race or their level of education or where they live or who their great-grandfather was. Or as a means of somehow making myself feel, oh, terribly accepting. Gee, I go out and get myself a Jewish friend and a Catholic friend and a Baptist friend and a black friend and a Chinese friend. And, oh, golly, do you suppose maybe I could find a Native American friend to add? See, look at me. Aren't I wonderful? Aren't I liberal? Aren't I inclusive? Aren't I multicultural? No, I'm sorry. My friend Rod says that I'm normal. He doesn't know me that well. My husband's laughing. But I feel fairly normal. I don't expect people to make assumptions about me based on the skin color that I happen to have been born with, or the shape of my head, or what color my eyes are, or the fact that I'm short. I don't make judgments about people based on those things. I never have. My parents didn't either. Neither did my stepdaughters. As far as I know, nor my grandchildren. My friend Ron says, yeah, quasi-normal. That's closer. I am quasi-normal. David agrees with you, Ron. He says, yep, you're right. I understand, Rod. Rod says that I sound like him, and it's not right to compliment himself. Well, I'm complimented, highly complimented, because I think you're pretty special, Rod. I think all of my friends at PatriotFamilies.com are special, purely and simply because they are all a little different. and they are all their own person. They speak honestly. They deal honestly with others. They try to do what is right instead of what is easy. They work for what they have, and they work to make this nation and this world better. Not by demanding that everybody agree with them, but by finding out the truth and speaking it without fear. They don't bludgeon people. They don't harangue them. They don't take them off, tie them up, and brainwash them into becoming something or other. They are people of integrity, and I am proud to be counted among their family and as one of their friends. I want the children that I work with in school to learn more from me than fractions or how to balance a chemical equation or the date of the Magna Carta or what an adverb is. I want them to learn from me, not by preaching to them or by precept, but by example, that learning is delightful, that knowledge is of value, that difference is a source of delight and not fear, and that to disagree does not mean you are attacking someone as a person. You are merely stating a different idea. And that what you believe is your business. If it gives you comfort and joy and teaches you to do unto others as you would be done by, then I am glad for you. Any one of them learns those things from me, I may never know that they have. I hope that they have and that they will. And that's what keeps me going. That's real hope, ladies and gentlemen, not a silly campaign slogan. It's real hope. Hope in the human spirit. Hope in our educational system as an opportunity for that spirit to flourish. An opportunity for one who has not had the easiest of comfortable lives to be in a place where he or she can learn and begin to shine in spite of background, in spite of ethnicity, in spite of economic circumstances. That's what our public education system is supposed to do. Not level the playing field, but prepare the players for the bumps and ruts in it. We cannot level the playing field for every human being on earth, ladies and gentlemen. We can't level the playing field for 2 fourth graders, for heaven's sake. If one of them is a total klutz and the other one is a natural athlete, or one of them has an IQ of 186 and the other one has an IQ of 112. Sorry, you can't do it that way. It doesn't come from artificially giving the 112 IQ an A and artificially giving the 187 IQ a B so the 112 won't feel bad. It doesn't come from giving the klutz a trophy for the long jump when he falls on his butt and denying the trophy to the natural athlete because it would make the klutz feel bad if he didn't win. When you break it down and bring it down to the simplest of terms, which I just did, you can see how ridiculous the progressive ideology of leveling the playing field and equality and sameness mean the same thing really is. You have to get past the sounds good, feel good, compassionate crap that has absolutely no potential for ever coming true that you hear out of liberal progressive mouthpieces. You have to look at the nuts and bolts and the practical aspects of the fact that human beings aren't machine parts. And short of eugenics and frontal lobotomies, you aren't going to make them into machine parts. You aren't going to change a culture of victimhood by perpetuating the victim mentality. You aren't going to give anybody an opportunity if you give them a grade they haven't earned. You aren't going to teach anybody anything if the only thing you're interested in is filling out paperwork and making sure numbers match racial lines. Exposing African-American children to good teachers, no matter what their race, is much more important than recruiting African-American teachers, administrators, or adjusting disciplinary practices. A good teacher is a good teacher, no matter what race he or she belongs to. It has very little to do with what color you are. Trust me. I work with teachers. I act as one, even though I'm not called a teacher. I also have a quote here that I'd like to share with you from Milton Friedman that kind of goes back to what I said earlier about the gentleman who invented and markets the buckyballs. This is Mr. Friedman's statement. Many people want the government to protect the consumer. A much more urgent problem is to protect the consumer from the government. Very wise man, Mr. Friedman. Looks like I have a caller. I have a guess who that caller is, but let's see if I'm right. Hello there.
Hi, Terry. It is the conservative bird of paradise from crazy California. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, honey. I'm so glad you could be with us tonight. How are things going in Agenda 21 territory?
Oh, my gosh. It's a battle, believe me, because I had a meeting yesterday, not yesterday, but the day before, at the mayor's office. And I pretty much in 20 minutes laid out what I wanted to have him know. And he kind of concurred with me. You know, he knew about it, but it's a long road. So I took away that I was going to have to educate the masses out here to get anywhere, which I will do. But it's funny because when you're talking about the diversity and then talking about these mandates and the black American this and, you know, the white American that and all these things that they're trying to do with these executive orders or whatever they're throwing at us now with the education system. And Glenn touched a little bit on this stuff because he was talking about the Chick-fil-A and, you know, the actual diversity of thought rather than the diversity of, you know, gee, somebody maybe looks different or maybe has... And he says, what the heck does it matter as an employer or to hire an employee, you know, based on the color of one's skin or whether they like to sleep with another guy or they, you know, the hell does that have to do with their job performance? Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
What does it have to do with their character? Nothing.
Nothing.
It's ridiculous. I mean, these guys, liberalism is a mental disorder. Savage has it right. I mean,
that was
one of his book titles. It's like they want to try to make pigs fly, and if the pigs can't fly, they get upset. I mean, that's how nuts they are.
Exactly. So they have to turn them into, redo them, operate on them, so that they're not pigs anymore, they're pig birds. And that way, you know, I've got a present for you, honey. Another quote from Milton Friedman.
I love him. He's great. Go ahead.
if you put the federal government in charge of the Sahara Desert, in 5 years there will be a shortage of sand.
Good one. Yeah, in fact, I was
reminds telling... reminds me of the Department of Education and the current state of our public schools.
Oh, awful. Yeah, you just keep stuffing the poor washing machine with the cash. The Ben Bernanke printing press cash.
Yeah, exactly. And then you kick the washing machine and vilify the heck out of it because it won't start just because you stuffed all the cash in it. I know.
I was telling Yo earlier that, because just before we got into your chat room on the other side, I had gotten some emails from these people at Action, and they were the libtard ones, and it was astounding to me. And when Ron said, ignorance is bliss, and I said, yes, it may be, but in the wrong hands, it can be damn dangerous because these people are nuts. And I was explaining to Yo that these people are spewing out this rhetoric like they were a camcorder and they had just listened to PMS LSD all day long.
Yes.
That's what
yep.
they do. And they have no facts to back it up. They have no original thought. They don't know history from Adam. I mean, I'm telling you, it's so frustrating. I'm sitting... And that's why I said I have my work cut out for me, because I'm going to compose some facts for these people, and I'm going to hand them out at the next meeting. And I'm not going to put any names on it, just facts. And, because they were saying things like, oh, you know, Romney's rich, and he doesn't connect with the people, and, you know, he's part of the 1%. He wants to destroy the middle class, and he's going to make Social Security and Medicare go broke. And I just thought, oh, my God.
Well, it's... Linda, it's the Harry Reid form of political discourse. He has to prove that he didn't do anything wrong. Oh, really? Since when? Ask Oscar Wilde about that back in 19th century London. How do you prove a negative?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Harry Reid belongs in an Alzheimer's ward. The guy is complete, along with Pelosi and a few others. Yeah, she's just Botox. I mean, the poor thing. She's probably stuck her head in her own vineyard vats too long, you know, sucking up the wine.
She's definitely stuck in some place that has affected her ability to think, because she doesn't. You know, I have never yet heard anything come out of that woman's mouth that indicates any degree of rational thought behind it.
Oh my God!
And I've listened. I have too.
It's hard to do, but
there isn't any. It's, you know, kind of like the professional nitpickers in David's philosophy classes when I was in college. One of the reasons he decided he didn't want a philosophy degree. I've watched this go on, Linda, for so long now. I mean, I have seen this dumbing down of the population so that they will be fodder for the progressive feel-good philosophy that it's not your fault you're stupid and lazy and incapable of doing a job. It's somebody else's fault, and we'll take care of you and beat the shit out of the guy who keeps you down. It's the constant feeding of a culture of defeat.
They're indoctrinating them so much. They're just pouring this garbage into these poor little kids, you know, the innocent brains that are like little sponges, and they're going to absorb whatever is thrown at them. And they're giving them this false ideology, which is a huge lie, and it's also very heinous in my estimation.
Yes, it is.
This is what's going on, and it's been going on for decades upon decades. I mean, I can't even go back that far, you know. But when I was
about the 1930s. Is pretty much
well, yeah, probably, because my mom, all these books I've gotten in recent times and been reading like crazy, she looks at them, she says, I was not taught this either. I says, I know. It's been a long time coming and, you know, all these things. And she's almost 90 years old, so we know how long ago this was going on. And so, like I said, my work's cut out for me, because I'm not only going to write to the governor of Alabama to try to find out how he eliminated Agenda 21 from his entire state. I'm going to beg him, please tell me how you did it. And I'm going to put together my fact sheet for these people who are just spewing out this nonsense, because they have, they are sucking down Kool-Aid like it was, you know, no tomorrow. I've never seen anything like it.
Unfortunately, the vast majority of people, and this is basic psychology, forgive me if I'm sounding like a professional nitpicker, although this is psychology, not philosophy. But people don't like change. People are uncomfortable with change. All change is stressful because it requires you to think differently or do differently, or your world isn't exactly the same as it was yesterday. Now, people want to be comfortable. We all strive to achieve a comfort level that varies between individuals because we are individuals. The people who follow the progressive Pied Piper are looking for a comfort level that is an alternate universe. They're
right.
Looking for a perfect world, and they're being told that it's achievable, and all
yes.
you have to do is put all of your choices in the hands of we enlightened progressives in government,
right.
and we will make this utopia reality.
Right.
You won't be a human being anymore, but boy, will you be comfortable. It's the same same general idea. There's a. I don't know whether you've ever read C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles, Linda.
No, I haven't.
They are delightful. Lewis was a Christian philosopher as well as an author, a very intelligent man, and his series of books set in the mythical or magical kingdom of Narnia, where the animals talk and the
mm-hmm.
king over all kings in Narnia is Aslan the lion, son of the great emperor over the sea, etc. And in the last book in the series, which is the end of Narnia, in sort of, there is an ape named Shift who has convinced a poor, silly, but good-hearted donkey to don a lion's skin and pretend to be Aslan, the king over all kings. And the ape is talking to the group of talking beasts and Narnian citizens
sure.
who have come waiting for Aslan to come out and show himself to them. And the talking horses are being put to work by a neighboring country's representatives who are helping Shift. And Shift the ape says, and now here's another thing, the ape went on, fitting a fresh nut into his cheek. I hear some of the horses are saying, let's hurry up and get this job of carting timber over as quickly as we can, and then we'll be free again. Well, you can get that idea out of your heads at once, and not only the horses either. Everybody who can work is going to be made to work in future. Aslan has it all settled with the king of Calormen, the Tizrock, as our dark-faced friends, the Calormenes, call him. All you horses and bulls and donkeys are to be sent down into Calormen to work for your living, pulling and carrying the way horses and such like do in other countries. And all you digging animals like moles and rabbits and dwarfs are going down to work in the Tizrock mines. And no, 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 howled the beast. It can't be true. Aslan would never sell us into slavery to the king of Calormen. None of that. Hold your noise, said the ape with a snarl. Who said anything about slavery? You won't be slaves. You'll be paid very good wages, too. That is to say, your pay will be paid into Aslan's treasury, and he will use it for everybody's good. Sound familiar?
Yep. Yeah, like zero. Oh, God, I know. The book that I was reading, and I told you the seven tipping points, and it's really amazing. And I thought, oh, boy, things haven't changed much since 1865 B.C. when everybody
mm-hmm.
was being worked to death just mm-hmm. to build another man's grave.
mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much it.
It hasn't
and
changed.
Unfortunately, and the bad part of it is now is the people who are being worked to death to build the grave are the ones who are going to have to lie in it.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
You know,
that's first.
I mean, if I can think of several people's graves I would be quite happy to build if I were assured that they were actually going to get into them fairly quickly. I'd pick up a shovel in a heartbeat. You know, digging my own
Absolutely.
Is not quite so attractive, you know. But the Schiff the ape and certain members of our government have a great deal in common.
Yes,
and
they do.
The perversion of what has been a good and righteous dream, a.k.a. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech,
mm-hmm.
the perversion by the vultures who feed on black victimhood literally
sure.
makes me physically ill.
They do.
This ridiculous, stupid initiative from the person who inhabits our White House right now is going to do absolutely nothing except make it much more likely that anybody who's African American in an inner city school is ever going to succeed at anything.
It's horrible.
It promotes the voting bloc he needs to stay in power, and the people behind him need to stay in power.
Oh, exactly. And they're pulling his strings. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's even now coming out in the, I call mainstream media, which is Fox News, because I don't see, you know, I told Bill today on one of the shows, I said, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear.
Pretty much, yeah.
So they were talking, they were trotting out Valerie Jarrett and explaining how much power she has and how much influence.
Uh-huh.
I'm going, oh, gee, I read that 3 or 4 years ago. Michelle Malkin
got
it.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Cultural corruption.
Yes, ma'am. And the thing is, nobody who is reasonably intelligent and rational believes this garbage. The biggest thing that pleased me about the tremendous response to Mike Huckabee's request for a Chick-fil-A appreciation did not have anything to do with gay marriage, homosexuality, biblical Christianity.
Right.
It had to do with listening to the interviews. At least 3 out of 4 people said, I'm here to protect that man's right to freedom of speech and freedom of religion, and I'm here because no government official should deny anyone the right to do business because they disagree with his beliefs.
I know.
That's
they're all pandering.
What gives me hope. That's what gives me hope, Linda, because hundreds of thousands of people who
stood in line, I know.
Stood in line in 100-degree weather to stand behind the ideas that this country was founded on.
Right.
That makes me feel tears of joy.
I think it's because people have, they've had it. They've just pushed it just one button too far.
Exactly. And there was one young man that our local station interviewed who basically said, I'm not here because I'm against gay marriage. As a matter of fact, I support gay marriage. I am against any official saying somebody can't do business because of his religious beliefs.
Unbelievable what they're doing. I know.
Can you imagine? A friend of mine posted on Facebook, can you imagine what would have happened if Rahm Emanuel had said something like that about a Muslim CEO making a remark about traditional marriage is preferable to anything else? For one thing. You know, we've gotten politically correct. The only people it's okay to bash are Christians. Not being one myself, you know, I have no axe to grind, okay? You can't bash one religion and claim that you're diverse and honor all of them. It's all or none. It's not selective religious freedom. It is total religious freedom. You can't have freedom for this religion and none for that one.
Want it both ways. Yeah, they always want it.
They do.
They're, you know, the only time that there's freedom of speech is when you agree with them.
That's right. That's pretty much it.
Disgusting.
And when, it's pathetic. And this is why we have what we have right now. Because we have a complicit media that too many people, and it also has to do with the apathy toward politics and political ideas and economic and so on and so forth that we have created by ill-educating an entire generation of voters.
Right.
We have allowed our colleges and universities to produce teachers who are more interested in how to teach children how wonderful socialism is than they are in knowing how to do word problems in math.
I know. That's all part of their plan.
Yes, it is. It's great undermining. It's shift the ape. The whole slew of them. This is the way it's going to be from now on because this is what the progressive God says you're supposed to do. And the progressive God is government. Well, as far as I know, I have not heard that there was an opening in the God slot, nor have I heard the government had put in a resume and was under consideration to fill it.
Yeah, you couldn't figure it out by them, though. That's what they think they already are, you know. I mean,
and the media promotes it promotes it over and over and over again. And, you know, Fox is often as guilty on the other end of the stick. They have a tendency to, you know, immediately assume they're a liberal, and even a stopped clock is right twice a day doesn't enter into their heads. There are people who are liberal, who are progressives, who occasionally do tell the truth. It's a rarity, but it does happen.
It's
and
true.
There are conservatives who lie through their teeth.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's not about liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, white, black, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist. It's about what's true and what's not. It's not about you've got to do what I tell you because I'm smarter than you are. Bull. No, you're not.
I agree. Well, I'm going to let you wrap it up, and thank you so much for taking my call. I just had to get all that stuff out.
Well, it's a pleasure, dear heart, as always, and you know I always look forward to my bird of paradise in California.
Thank you, love.
And as I said earlier, honey, you are a hero.
Thank you so much, hon. Just doing what comes naturally.
A natural hero. I knew there were some out there. Now, you're our next Georgina Washington.
Thank you, love. God bless.
God bless you too, sweetheart. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Linda, a hardworking and very bright lady who never stops learning and who never stops trying, is always a welcome guest on Patriot Education, just as any of you out there listening are welcome to call in and express your views. I don't expect you to agree with me. You don't call me and tell me so. The only thing that I ask is if you disagree, do so with courtesy. I try very hard to be courteous when I disagree with people. There are times when my anger and my passion and my despair at what I see as willful ignorance overmasters me, and I apologize for that. I do not apologize for inadvertently offending someone because I believe something different from what they believe. Nor do I apologize for inadvertently offending someone because I think what they have said is untrue. If I am unwilling to take the chance of offending anyone, I might as well have my lips sewn shut and check into a custodial care facility, because I can't live as a free human being if I must curtail everything I think, say, and do to avoid offending someone, some group, some ethnicity, some ideology, some political opinion. We have got to stop worrying about whether we're offending someone and start worrying about whether or not we're speaking the truth. And we have to teach our children that speaking the truth doesn't automatically give you riches, accolades, and the top of the heap. Mr. Cathy, the CEO of Chick-fil-A, spoke what he believed to be the truth and what was the truth about his personal convictions. And as Glenn Beck said, he's a big boy. He understands that there will be people who will boycott his restaurant because they see his beliefs as insulting to them. That is their privilege. They can have all the kiss-ins they want. They can stand out in front of Chick-fil-A's signs, call the people sexist, bigot, or whatever they want to. They have the right to free assembly, just as the people going to Chick-fil-A have the right to patronize a business because they support the right of its founder to speak his beliefs honestly and openly and take the consequences, if there are any, commercially, if need be. I've had so many students get all upset and angry because they have stated something that was untrue or not rational. I have said, wait a minute, that's not true. Well, you're disagreeing with me. You're offending me. You're just telling me I'm wrong and I'm bad. It's because this is what they have been taught. That if someone disagrees with you, they are attacking you. They hate you. They want to do something bad to you. They're trying to stop you from succeeding. They don't want you to be happy. You name it. It has nothing to do with the fact that they have a different opinion or a different view of the world. They're just actively mean because they don't agree with you. This is the progressive mindset, ladies and gentlemen. Someone who believes in a particular religion and its tenets and its dogma and its teaching has the right to follow that belief system, so long as it does not break the laws of the land, or, as Jefferson put it, break my arm or pick my pocket. If you want to be a reformed druid and worship bushes, like Hawkeye on MASH, go for it. If you want to gather with your coven and dance under the moon to pull forth positive energies for your spells, white magic, fine. I prefer that you not put on my front lawn because it's private property. I have absolutely no axe to grind when it comes to who marries who. That's between the people who are marrying each other. I have a good friend who happens to be gay, who just married his partner. And I'm happy for both of them because they love one another, care for one another, and want to spend their lives together. I am highly in favor of more love in this world, ladies and gentlemen. What I am not in favor of is disguising hatred with words of sappy sentimentality or false compassion. It does no one any good to assume that their ideas or opinions are sacrosanct and totally invalid and cannot be disagreed with. All that does is create a culture of dishonesty, of seething hatred, and potential violence. Many people around the world are baffled by the American love of freedom of speech. Our desire to spout off at the drop of a hat and proclaim our beliefs or our opinions or our ideas and shout at each other over them. How, you know, that makes for a horrible society. It's why you're so violent. No, it isn't. We're not really very violent. I don't have to be afraid to walk up my front door for fear some gang of people who don't like my religion are going to shoot me the minute I show my face in public. The chances of my dying in a terrorist attack are infinitely smaller than the chances of being struck by lightning. I'm smart enough not to walk out in the middle of a thunderstorm, and I certainly am not going to try to invade an Al-Qaeda cell. But I don't live in fear because I know there are crazy people in the world, and I don't stop going to the movies because one insane person kills 12 people. I do keep talking, ladies and gentlemen, and I do keep doing this show, not because I expect to become rich or famous. I won't. And I don't really want to be famous. I want to be rich, but I'm a very private person in many ways, and I don't want to be famous. I do it because the finest things in life come from freedom, progress, creativity, and innovation, and that our children need to learn that in their classroom and in their living room. And I believe that we, the nation, can teach it to them by remembering that individual liberty goes with individual responsibility, and every one of us must be willing to do what is right instead of what is easy. Join us every night, ladies and gentlemen, for a blog talk radio show from Patriot Families. Constitution Hour on Mondays, Patriot Family Chat on Tuesday, Right from the Left Coast on Wednesday, Patriot Education every Thursday, Foreclosure Help on Friday, Breaking the Illusion on Saturday, and Frank is Fed Up. Visit our website, www.patriotfamilies.com and learn, grow, and be every possible good thing you can, because we are the nation. Good night, everyone. Have a great evening.